I offer you an excerpt from Radical Hospitality, Benedict's Way of Love. In this passage, the author Lonnie Collins Pratt is describing a moment of spiritual growth born of a moment of discomfort with the other. She writes, "The one who would otherwise have avoided Kevin is the one who is really changed, when they can no longer ignore someone whose only crime was making them uneasy." Continuing with her story. Imagine you are in line behind a very nice woman who is clearly uneasy with the young man bagging her purchases. The kid is probably 35, but mentally closer to 12 or 13. Blonde, a short with a wide smile, and a 3-inch scar across his left temple that suggests that maybe he was not born with the disability. His name badge reads Kevin. Kevin greets the woman, "Are you in a hurry today?" The woman does not look at Kevin. Instead, she looks at the cashier and manages a faint smile. She says, "The lines are rather long this morning." The cashier nods and keeps running the items through the register. Kevin tries again. "You have a lot of pop here. Is it for a party? Are you going to have company?" The older woman turned towards the person behind her in line, as if looking for help, a slightly frantic look in her eyes. She was not a mean-spirited woman. She simply had come of an age and an era when such a young man would have been institutionalized, rather than commenting on her purchases. The woman behind her says, "You do have a lot of pop." "My grandson is turning 14. It's for his party." "My sister had a birthday party," the disabled young man says. He drools, and it lands on the liter-sized bottle of pop and rolls off. The women notice, but continue on. "I'll bet that was a lot of fun," says the woman behind the customer. Then the woman buying the pop for her grandson's party did a courageous thing. She turned toward Kevin, took a breath, and looked him in the eye. "Did you enjoy the party?" Kevin nodded. "I like parties. My sister says she gets 2 birthdays a year because I'm such a pain in the butt, so she gets mine." He grins really big. "But she don't mean it, because she always takes me to the show for my birthday and I get the biggest bag of popcorn." Suddenly, to the woman, Kevin was a real live person, and he was no longer someone she was interested in escaping. "I'm certain that your sister loves you too." Good morning. A few weeks ago, I read a newspaper article online about a choir concert held in Rock Island, Illinois. The mother had attended the concert, and when she went to take a picture of her daughter, she had to widen the shot, and then widen it a little more, because 6 feet away from all the other kids, off the stage, sat her daughter in her wheelchair. And this wasn't the only girl this happened to. There were 2 girls who ended up off stage in their wheelchairs. When questioned, school officials said they couldn't find the ramp that they use. It's easy to see such errors in hospitality when the person is right in front of us. But what about when the person isn't already here? A few years back, I attended a social justice ministry retreat in Camp de Benneville Pines, and I got involved in a discussion about accessibility. A woman there was using a cane, and she had difficulty navigating the slippery surfaces in a San Bernardino mountain winter. I commented that although there was a chime, a bell, to signal gathering activities and the time, there were no lights for the hearing impaired. There were no interpreters. And when a gentleman responded, "Will no deaf people come here?" I responded, "Why would they? You have nothing to offer them." I'm going to go ahead and assume that we all agree that diversity and multiculturalism is a good thing, that there are benefits to including those who are unlike ourselves, and that it's a worthy and noble pursuit and a noble goal. So that's not going to be my focus today. Instead, I'm interested in the how. How do we move an institution from being dominated by a single culture to one that is rich in diversity while still maintaining a beloved community? In 2010, 4 Unitarian Universalist leaders held a workshop titled Multicultural Membership Journey. This workshop programmatically linked the congregational growth areas of multiculturalism and membership for one of the first times in documented UU history. Out of this workshop arose a document called Multicultural Welcome. It's a training resource for building multicultural awareness in congregations that are looking to become more fully and truly welcoming. In this document, the authors identify two traits of the people that we should be focused on welcoming to our congregation. Neighbors, who are unlike ourselves. The authors define neighbor as someone who lives within a reasonable distance that they would consider attending regularly. So San Fernando Valley, Palmdale, not so much, although we appreciate the people who make the drive, probably more likely to find someone in Santa Clarita Valley. Santa Clarita Valley, for your information, according to the last census, is 70% white, 20% Hispanic, 8% Asian, and roughly 2% black. Look around. Do we reflect that? Most importantly, the neighbor is the person who is not already attending. So we've dealt kind of with the why and the who and the where, but how? Earlier in my reading, I introduced the book Radical Hospitality. This is the how. The author, Lonnie Collins Pratt, defines radical hospitality as activities and desires that inspire individuals and communities to welcome those who are unlike themselves. So it's kind of a theoretical concept. Let's bring it to the real world. There are three areas that the book identifies where we can employ radical hospitality in our congregational and daily lives. Those groups are facilities, language, and actions, and we'll go through those in turn. Facilities, of course, refers to the physical space, the actual building, the room that we're in. In the book Radical Hospitality, Lonnie Collins Pratt uses the phrase preparing the table. Now, in that context, she actually means it literally with food. We're all familiar with Americana, like hot dogs and hamburgers. But what about a snack from the Middle East or desserts from Asia? It can also refer to physical accommodations for those with disabilities, handicap ramps, rails, assisted listening devices for those who are hard of hearing. Preparing the table really refers to the small details that make a person feel welcome when they walk in the door. I don't know about you, but I appreciate the little fairies who decorate the chalice with the plants in the mornings. But these decorations can also reflect the dominant culture. A few weeks ago, we were kind of inundated with red hearts of Valentine's Day. But I don't necessarily recall seeing anything about the Lunar New Year. 8% of Santa Clarita Valley is Asian. So how do we prepare the table for those who aren't already here? So let's engage in a little bit of an exercise. We know what the room looks like. We know where the doors are, where the podium is. So I'm going to ask you right now to close your eyes. And I want you to imagine what the room would look like if we prepared the table for the person who has a Muslim background, for the person who has a Jewish background, for the person who is black, for the person who has a dietary restriction, for the person who is incredibly poor or homeless, for the person whose English is a second language, for somebody who is autistic and completely nonverbal, or any identity or label which makes you wish you were anywhere but here. Go ahead and open your eyes and take a look around. The second category which I will cover, in which we can include radical hospitality, is in our language. And you heard me use this in this exercise we just did. It's people who are. And I got this from the state of Illinois, the Department of Human Services, who has a brochure that says how to interact with people with disabilities. And they suggest the people first. This helps identify and center it on the person, not the label. So we don't stick people in a box which they can never escape. It allows for multiple identities. That person that I listed in the beginning could all be the same person. We want to fully welcome the whole person, not just what they necessarily feel comfortable sharing. Putting people first in this kind of way also avoids potentially offensive labels that have come in and out of vogue. Maybe we rattle these off without thinking. We've heard about it in the news media. But every once in a while, sometimes racist or classist or elitist language can sometimes creep in without noticing it. If you use this kind of phrasing, it helps avoid that sort of pitfall. Another method in which we can employ language is through shared experience questions. And this is a pretty good, this is an excellent technique, actually, for people you already know. For example, how many people know where Chatsworth is? Okay, how many people know where Fort McMurray is? Oh, much better. Okay, good. Fort McMurray is in Alberta, Canada, by the way. Now, when I asked you that question, did you feel a part of my community? Or did you feel like I had separated myself from you? Did you feel like I was asking about you? Or was I asking about how you relate to me? Another shared experience question is, what was your favorite hymn we sung today? Did you like the story for all ages? This is particularly good for newcomers whom you might not know anything about, but we've all had the same experience. And then finally, with regards to language, I want to talk about actual languages. I go to all across Los Angeles County, and I go to various businesses, and I install computers. That's what I do. And I can tell you that, having looked at all crosses of life, nothing lights up a person's face more than when they hold the door open for you and you respond, shukran, which is Arabic for thank you. Considering the environment, the political environment, the social environment of the United States today, to take the step to welcome those who are most marginalized in our political discourse is an amazing way to build community across diverse cultures. My mom told me a story about her going to Joann's after researching sari, which is an Indian style of dress. And she was careful to make sure she said, I want to wear sari, not wear a sari. It's a style of dress, not the actual particular piece of clothing. And she approached a woman because she needed advice. And she said, hey, is this the right drape? And the woman was so impressed because my mom had taken the time to educate herself about the other culture enough that she could use the right language and build community with that woman, even though she might have never have met him before. These are all spiritual practices. And I define, and I use the definition of spiritual practice as an action intended to make a change or adjustment in the deepest realm of self. The woman from the reading, she might not have a religious motivation to have addressed Kevin, but I would argue she definitely had a spiritual one. There was a change made. Such actions, such spiritual practices, and I'm going to refer to a few weeks ago, we had Reverend Betty Stapleford up here, and she mentioned the word promote. And I get that. It's hard to go out there and talk about our religion. But every once in a while, if you talk to somebody long enough, you get an opening. Maybe they mention God. Maybe they mention their church. Go ahead and mention yours. It's also okay to invite somebody to something other than a worship service where they may feel either intimidated, or maybe there's somebody like me who has a Christian background but for whom the Bible and God were weaponized. Maybe something like a game night might be a little bit more comfortable to introduce them to. This is how we invite people into our space. Another way is we can include a variety of religious and cultural traditions in worship service. I don't know if anybody else noticed, but on the easel a few weeks ago, there was a comment requesting that the pagan wheel of the year be more included. This is a community member who is already here, who is asking to be more welcome in this congregation. Are we listening? Listening is the most important aspect of radical hospitality. If you do nothing else, do this part. The dominant culture must make space and step back to truly hear what the other needs. It makes no sense if we have been asked to include the pagan wheel of the year to then spend a series on the five pillars of Islam. We haven't listened. We may think we know, but we didn't listen. The dominant culture must ask this question central to radical hospitality. May I know you better? But we must be open to what comes next, especially when it regards to the person who isn't here, which is a hard question to ask. How do you ask somebody what you need when they aren't here? Well, I mentioned the statistics. If we look around, we look at our neighbors, we can see the needs in our communities. There are two challenges that come across when we're practicing listening. The first challenge is the person, actually, let me reverse this a little bit, because that first challenge is the person who isn't here. That is the preparing the table so that way this person feels that we have already assumed that they were coming. By educating yourself about language, if a person approaches you and they're from Egypt, you already knew that you were going to meet them. It makes them feel welcome. The second challenge is the person whose needs we cannot meet. And we see that most often with the homeless and the mentally ill. These are often the categories that cause us the most discomfort, because as human beings, we've kind of lost the ability to determine what's discomforting versus what's dangerous. And for this way to prepare the table, I'm actually going to take a story that I heard yesterday from our guitarist, Steve. And he found that if he prepared himself mentally and physically with cards for services for the homeless, maybe a kit with a toothbrush, some soap. For women who are homeless, often sanitary napkins are impossible to get a hold of. So there's all these different things we can do to practice radical hospitality. Because the truth is that human connections grow beloved communities. Connections between diverse groups grow us spiritually as individuals. And it is hospitality that grows diversity. I believe that we can explore and make space for the other without sacrificing our Unitarian Universalist identity. In conclusion, instead of imagining what it was that made you feel most welcome, imagine what small piece we each can offer by preparing the space, using language, or some small action to welcome someone with whom you might never have otherwise socialized. Thank you for your time.